It's time to wake up with a nice cup of morning roast. Featuring
Fillmore's finest, Monte Hill.
Here, Joe, Butcher, Boy, Shasky. Take it out. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, The Morning Roast. Oh, baby, oh, baby, oh, baby, oh, baby, oh, baby. I got some weird looks of love in this Spadoni Shasky. As we say, good morning to everybody out there getting off their graveyard shift. If you're at work, what is happening? My guy's got the memo. Spadoni and Lovin, they know the assignment. They understand the assignment. Giants could win 25-2. We're not starting this show anymore. This baseball season, what a highlight. No. We will talk to Fleming a little later
just
today.
Just sell and just fire everybody.
Well, we're going to figure that out on September 30th and October 1st. That's a big question. What are they going to do with Farhan Zaidi? Hey, but at least they get a win against the Brewers 13-2. All right, thus concludes our Giants talk. Good morning to all the graveyard shift workers, all the carpenters, all the janitors, everybody who came out to the Olympic Club fight night. We'll get into that at some point today. The overnight dancers, they deserve their crew. They deserve their credit. Probably was a slow night, a Wednesday in the city. Probably was slow, but you know what? Keep grinding. Keep grinding. Your day will come. All the teachers, all the cops, all the sheriffs. Shasky, man, you surviving over there, man? What's up?
I'm feeling great. We're going to have to order some food this morning, though. I'm not going to lie.
Well,
your boy is working on very little bit of energy. You and I were working the room last night. Look, I said it last night. I screamed it into the microphone. I'll say it again today. I'm a proud San Franciscan.
Yep.
I'm a proud member of the Bay Area and Northern California. I am active in coaching, and I want to make my community better. Look, we all can agree on a lot of things, right? Like, we chose to live here, all right? Some of us are having an easier or harder time to be able to afford to live here, but we want a better community for our kids, right? That's what we want. Yep. And I know we're a sports radio station, but we're given all these opportunities to utilize our platform. And that's why we try to shout out high school sports and all that. Last night, the Olympic Club Foundation puts together this big charity event to try to raise money to better our community.
Fight night.
And yeah, it's a boxing night. And you and I were honored to be able to be a part of it last year. And we were even more honored last night to be able to do it.
Well, I think we just come cheap.
Well, that's... there's no doubt about that.
Should we hit Jar Reed with the, hey, yesterday's price isn't today's price?
No. Then we'll be on the sidelines looking in. But, you know, as everyone around the country just loves to take a dump on our city and our area, and I admit, like, it's not perfect. Like, we're far from it, all right? But there are people doing good things. And the Olympic Club Foundation and all the different benefactors and the people drumming up charity, those are the people that are out there doing the really good work behind the scenes that nobody wants to acknowledge. They raised $1 million, and we were hopefully trying to be a part of that. $1 million that's going to go to over 75 different programs and all of the 9 Bay Area counties for all of these children. 22 different sports. That was last year, so maybe it'll be more. But 22 different sports last year, and kids' sports got opportunities to get some of this money and this funding. Yeah. Like, that's... so, I know we're, like, lucky to do this. You came up doing high school. I'm still coaching. So, like, this is what we do it for. It's for the kids.
Yep. And over, what, $1.7 million in the last 2 years.
Incredible.
That this event has raised here. For, over $700,000 last year. They opened the doors, and it was $400,000 already in the bank. And then by the end of the night, it was over $1 million. So, and it's a great cause, man. It's a lot of great cause. And, you know, a lot of city natives, you know, and, you know, you get some people from the East Bay, but, you know, they say the city is dead. The city is dead. The city's not vibrant. The city's this. The city's that, as you just mentioned here. And to see the city in each district represented, each sector of the city represented, whether it was West Sunset, South Sunset, the Richmond District, the Excelsior, the Mission, Fillmore was in the building.
How about
Bayview?
The kid from Potrero Hill?
Yeah.
The kid boxing from Potrero Hill. Potrero How
Hill.
Great was that?
Potrero Hill was in the building, so it's always a good night in there. Then you get Mike Dunleavy Jr. in the building.
Oh, that was
Mike
great.
Dunleavy, he was in there. We got some jokes off on him. Gary Payton II, the honorary chair.
Guy.
GP2's the man. Michael Buffer was in the building.
Dude, Michael Buffer was there, and he did. We can't do it on air.
We can't
air.
Do it, but he did what he did.
He did what he does.
He did what he does.
And let's just, I'm going to tell you
right now. Don't talk about that.
I got goosebumps. Everyone had their phones out, and I get why.
Right.
I just soaked in the moment.
Yeah, me too.
I felt like I was around like a sports luminary. Yeah,
no, he was. I mean, an he icon. Was just smiling. It's like, man, thank you for everything, man. And he's on his way to London, and he's going to Dubai. There's a big fight with Anthony Joshua out in London, Wembley Stadium. He's like, yeah, I got to go to Wembley. 100,000 people are going to be at that fight. 100,000 people. That's what he does.
Dude,
like,
pipes,
that's just what he does.
His you know pipes were so golden.
He's ageless. He still looks the same.
He's incredible.
He's incredible. Bill Cartwright was in the building.
I mean, USF legend. Bill,
John Dugan Jr. You know, we had Big Dino out there.
Oh, Big Dino.
And then you find out that there's a bunch of roasters.
Oh, my goodness.
So we got a guy that...
this was the best.
Mr. Niehaus. He's like, yo, my son, he just texts me. And his son goes, Bonte, Shasky, I'm a roaster.
I swear
and
to
so
God,
And so his father
Sonny.
Takes a selfie. And I got to say, David Niehaus, he went to Branson High School. He's 26 years old. He's still living on his mama's couch, and all he does is listen to the roast.
Hey, thank
you. So, David, I appreciate you listening, but it's time you get your ass up and go get a job, buddy.
Oh, his parents were great.
His parents were great.
They were
like,
so
we keep
sweet.
Making him salami sandwiches every morning. He doesn't want to leave the house.
I said to the mom, I go, I'm really sorry. She's like, oh, you guys are in sports radio? I go, yeah, do you listen to us? She's like, no, I don't. I'm like, that's probably better.
Right, but then she goes, you know, my son, look, if he's a roaster, who birthed the roaster? So in a way, I'm a roaster
that
too.
Was so good.
And I was like, wow, this is next level. There's so
family.
Many people. Jordan taking photos out there. Yeah, David, you had
a young
Arlene.
Man, Bryce out in San Rafael.
Yep.
And his daughter goes to Terra Linda, and big soccer player. His son's into baseball and basketball and this and everybody was just having a great
right.
time. By the way, if we ever get pulled over again, I think we met enough cops last night. We should be able to take care of it.
I think, you know, I actually did mention this Spadoni alum in Shasky last night. I said, you know, the greatest perk of his job, it's not like, you know, it's great getting a credential, right, for sporting events.
Yeah,
and some people think, oh, man, do you like having a little street cred, man? You and Shasky are famous, blah, blah, blah. No, the thing is if we do get pulled over by cops, we are good in this city. Like, I never thought a kid like me, like a little,
right,
I can't speak for
Shasky,
but you know, African-Americans and police, you know, we've got a rich history together. It's nothing to brag home about. It's nothing to brag home about. Hell, we're talking about Tyreek Hill for crying out loud this past week. But it is something to know that I'm a black kid. That in this city, I get more cops tipping their hat to me and saying, hey, Bonte, what's up, man? What's going on? And I'm like, I never thought I'd be good in the hood with the ASFPD.
Well,
that's the biggest flex ever.
I mean, Rich Hunt didn't let you come up for air for about 40 minutes.
Nah, he was rolling.
I turned around and like, I thought the two of you were going to make out.
Hey, that's my guy, Rich Hunt, man. That's my guy, Rich Hunt.
Greg Sir's son, yeah. Huge roaster.
Matt
that
Sir.
That was great.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Mark Farrell was in the building. I mean, yep. It was a who's who.
No, it wasn't.
The best part, though, was when we got the, when John Dugan gives us his business card, and he's like, anytime you need anything. I'm like, John, this is probably a bad idea. We eat at Elena's and Westlake Joe's all the time. I'm going to be bothering you a lot.
See, what I do is, I try to do it once a year, because I realize that, not my mom, but my mother-in-law. Just Alona Novikov.
Don't run her over.
Hey, Alona, man. You know, we got this thing in her. And she was the first person to take me to Elena's.
Elena's is off the hook.
She would literally every day, we should go back to Elena's. We should go back. Knowing that if we got the plug, if we got the red carpet treatment, she lives for that.
100%.
She lives for that.
100%.
So I'm like, John Dugan Jr., be careful with this. But it was good to see him yesterday. He's big. Dude,
Bill Cartwright, by the way. I mean, he wants about a legend, like a city legend.
Oh.
My dad used to shoot the Bill Cartwright free throws. He used to say Bill Cartwright because he'd go over the ear. I'm sorry as I'm messing up the microphone here. USF, Chicago Bulls, like every, when I say, you guys know Bill Cartwright, right? Young guys? Yeah, okay, good. USF legend, Dunleavy, by the way. I want to know what diet he's on. To stay as skinny as he is to this day, I'm so jealous.
Oh, he's a high level, dude, he's a high level golfer.
I'm aware of that now.
Works out. And, you know, he looked taller yesterday for some reason. I was like, damn, don't leave me. Did you
he's
grow?
He's 6'9", so it's a little easier to stay, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but
if
I was
you
just,
told me he was 7'9", I'd believe you.
Right.
He's so tall.
He was so tall, but we ran some jokes on him. We ran some jokes on him.
I asked him, like, can we ever going to get this Lurie marketing deal done? What's going on here?
You know what I go? I go, Mike, don't worry. He's never watched a dribble of the Utah Jazz. He's just running material.
Like 95% of the Warrior fan base. Now, here was the best part of the night, Joe.
I was like, hey, Mike, you got the day off? Joe Lincoln let you get the day off, man? Not in the office?
There were so many just generous people. Bill Poland being able to close the gap and help us out. Just so many charitable individuals. My favorite part of the night. It's the end of the night, and they're auctioning off some of the tables. And there's like a sit-down meet-and-greet with Brock Purdy. And I thought to myself a couple of things. Number one, Jimmy, great guy. We all like Jimmy. But I don't remember Jimmy doing, and I'm not knocking him for this. I'm not trying to rip Jimmy. I'm more hyping up Brock.
I know where you're going.
Like, Jimmy just didn't do a lot of those things. Like, kind of out of sight, out of mind. And I don't blame him. Like, when you're in these positions, right. Some people just don't want to be bothered or whatever. They have their reason. They want to be with their family. They want to go back to where they're from. Brock Purdy was going to do a sit down with Joe Fonzie, and they were raffling it off or auctioning it off for charity, and you'd be able to ask Brock some questions and whatnot. And I thought to myself, like, what a great dude. You know, Brock Purdy is to do this. And the amount of people that were jumping out of their seats to be able to bid on this was unreal.
Well, our boy Joe Cunningham, who works here in the sales department, was doing the auctioning. He was the auctioneer last night. Shout out to Joe, who, you don't know this, Shasky, I left my dress socks at home.
Yeah.
And Joe was like, come on, we ready to go out? I was like, yeah, come up to the store with me. I need to buy some dress socks. He goes, dude, I got an extra pair in the bag.
Oh, nice.
Who carries an extra pair? Joe Cunningham does. It got to meet his lovely, lovely wife.
Sweetheart.
So he hooked me up with some dress socks. So he's doing the auctioneering off, and they're selling about $10,000 a pop. Tables are $10,000.
Unreal.
And one guy, he was like, wait, we got $25,000. Dude was like, I just want to spend $25,000. I got $25,000 right here.
It was incredible.
He dropped it like it was $100,000 got spent to go have to sit down and watch this sit down with Joe Fonzie and Brock Purdy. It spent over $100,000 in like 2 minutes.
It was incredible. And I thought it spoke to, obviously, the charitable aspect for all of the individuals there and just helping out our community. Again, like you were talking about, like, everybody, the city's dead. The city wasn't dead last night.
No, but
it was a throwback
spent.
Night. And to see how much people care about Brock Purdy, it blew me away.
Well, to your point about Jimmy, and we're going to get this guy.
I don't want to make this like an anti-Jimmy thing. I hope that didn't come off that way.
No, but here's the deal with being the 49ers quarterback. Being the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, there is a cachet that comes with it. And there's this built-in, hey, you have to be a member of the community. What made Joe Montana so great? He was a member of the community while he played. Now, you know, he comes out and does things, but he comes out.
Absolutely.
Steve Young, one of the best ambassadors in 49ers franchise history. Comes out, he supports.
Absolutely.
Jeff Garcia, Gilroy guy, you know what I'm saying, came out and represented the 49ers. Whether we like what he said in the past or not, he was a member of the community. Jeff Garcia was visible. He tried to do what he could in this community. And that's the thing that you have to do, Alex Smith, which is why he's beloved despite some subpar play at the quarterback position. We feel a certain way about Alex Smith, but he embraced the community, which is now whenever he comes back, everybody goes crazy for Alex Smith. Mm-hmm. Even though the numbers on the field was a little different, he still embraces community, which we make. So Brock Purdy to do that, that's what Jimmy didn't do. He's just out of sight, out of mind, which sometimes I wish I could do it. Out of sight, out of mind, but there does come a responsibility with being a quarterback of the 49ers to embrace this community. There was just something closed off about Jimmy, and maybe it was social media. Who knows? Who the hell knows? But Brock Purdy does embrace this community. You see him out and about, concerts, different games or whatnot. So people love Brock Purdy. And that was the biggest thing. As we get into Brock Purdy, we're going to see him for the first time without Christian McCaffrey. And I'm excited to see it. Because I think he's going to thrive in this offense, and I think he's going to take his game to another level. In the room yesterday at the Olympic Club, Shasky, everybody's like, we got our guy. We have Brock Purdy. We're not even tripping. There was a lot of people I met last night that weren't even stressing out about the Christian McCaffrey injury because of Brock Purdy.
Which kind of blew me away. And I was thinking to myself, like, how many Niner quarterbacks in the last 20 years would you not be panicking if the best player, literally one of the best players on the planet, on the cover of Madden, was out indefinitely, essentially? And you'd be, if it was Garcia, I mean, they lost Garrison Hurst and Garcia and Owens all, we lost our minds. Alex Smith loses Frank Gore?
Yeah.
We'd be in big trouble.
Yep.
Colin Kaepernick loses Frank Gore? And I love Frank. Frank's not as talented as CMC. Yeah. He had a better longevity and career and all those things, but like in terms of just raw talent, the year we just had from CMC's one of the greatest 49er running back seasons ever.
No doubt.
I just think of Jimmy, Nick Mullins, Trey, pick whoever you want. If that running back was out, we'd be like, oh my God, can they go 500 over X amount of weeks?
Right.
I don't even know if that's crossed my mind.
Yeah, no, it hasn't. And I'm excited to see this. Because one, you get to decide, okay, is this guy a $60 million a year quarterback? Is he the quarterback that you can reset the market with? As Jay York pointed out earlier this offseason, he's going to reset the quarterback market. Well, we'll see. But also, his evolution is just a quarterback and the leader of this football team. Without Christian McCaffrey, now he needs to demand the huddle even more. Now he needs to get these running backs in the right spot, whether it's Jordan Mason, whether it's Isaac Corindo, whether it's Kyle Juszczyk, or Deebo Samuel in that backfield. He's got to command that huddle. He's got to get guys in the right spot, and he has to play at an elite level without turning the ball over. And there's going to be some risk here with the offense moving forward without a CMC. You're going to try to find some explosives, and you're going to take some chances. But in a way, I'm thinking to myself, boy, what if he does strive without Christian McCaffrey, which I anticipate. We know for sure, hands down, no doubt about it, we got a guy for the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, and I think if you critique or ask for one of these things, people think you're a hater or you're waiting for someone's downfall. Case in point, I wanted to see what Patrick Mahomes looked like without Tyreek Hill. Yeah, he's that good.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I kind of figured that out pretty quickly. But I did want to see what it looked like. And I'm not even a Chiefs fan. And I'm not some Patrick Mahomes quote-unquote hater. Like, at the time, now I am because he's, you know, broken my heart. Right now, Josh Allen.
I was just going to say that.
Without Stephon Diggs. Come on, keep it real. You want to see what he looks like.
Without Gabe Davis. Without Stephon Diggs.
Right?
He looked pretty damn good last week.
And I love Josh Allen. Yeah. You know this. I love Josh Allen.
He looked pretty damn good last week.
And I'm a chick. I want to see what Joe Burrow looks like without T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase at times.
We do see him. And it's not as good.
No.
It's not as good.
So I don't think you're some like definitive hater if you're just intrigued to see what it looks like for a couple of weeks. Not that you don't want your team at full strength. Of course you do. But like, isn't there a little bit of curiosity?
Absolutely. 888-957-9570. Are you excited to kind of and look, it comes at the expense of Christian McCaffrey being hurt. We don't wish injuries on nobody. But even a Brock Purdy hater, aren't you a little intrigued to see Brock without CMC? Don't you want to get, like, here's the other thing with the Brock haters, the Brock Purdy haters. 888-957-9570, some of you out there. Can he win you over by playing well without Christian McCaffrey? Is this the point where you say, okay, I give in. He's the guy, Brock Purdy. Like, you got to, at some point, you got to give in. Is this the time to do it? Brian Flores, Sunday in Minnesota, a team that picked you off twice in the fourth quarter last year, and they're going to be rocking with that. Even for the Brock haters, isn't this a chance for Brock to win you over?
Boy, I feel like it is. I think this is a great opportunity for him right now, and I keep coming back to the same thing. I think I'd be super panicked if it was any other quarterback.
Yeah, I don't feel any panic, Shasky.
And I keep going back to, like, dude, this guy, he's just a stud. He's an absolute stud. But I am, straight up, though, I am intrigued. I'm very intrigued to see what it looks like. Because I do think this offense can evolve and look different. And they might be better for it come December and January. Because they've won a certain way. And it might force Kyle to be able to come off of some of his principles.
Absolutely. I do love that aspect of it. 888-957-9570. Folks, chime in here. Brock Purdy. If he hasn't won you over, can he win you over now without Christian McCaffrey? We don't know how long he's going to be out. We'll hear from Shanahan. We'll hear what he had to say about Christian McCaffrey. We'll get our thoughts about that. 888-957-9570 plus Matthew Collar. Matthew Collar is going to join us at 6:50. He covers the Vikings for PurpleInsider.com. He's at every single practice. We'll see what Sam Darnold looks like. What does Brian Flores have in store? Jordan Addison killed the Niners last year. 7-4, 123, including that touchdown on the cover zero blitz. We all remember that. There was no Justin Jefferson in that game. So now we're going to see Justin Jefferson. We're going to see him this time around. Have the Niners even seen Justin Jefferson yet?
No, the last time they played him before that, I believe, I have it all right here.
It was at Levi's, right?
So they played in 2023.
Right.
They played in 2021. All right. It was a 26-34 game. Let me pull this up.
Jefferson in that game?
I'm pulling it up right now. Adam Thielen. No, Madison. Ron Jennings.
This is the first time we're going to see
Justin Jefferson. He had a pass in that game. He was 1-for-1. He had 4 catches, 83 yards. I don't even remember this game.
Was that the 34-26 game?
Yep.
I remember the game. Jimmy Garoppolo. It was a playoff game, basically. We'll pick that
they
up on the other
side. 6-5, the Niners, after that game.
Yeah, that was a playoff game. Yeah, it was basically a playoff game.
November 28th, my birthday.
Yep. We'll pick that up on the other side. Brought to you by Save Mart, Lucky California.
Third down and 6. Blitz off the edge. Cousins throws, and it's taken away by Addison for the touchdown. He and Charvarius Ward fighting for the ball, and this time Addison takes it for the score.
I think Simon was blown on the touchdown, called an all-out blitz, and he's got to get rid of it right away, and he threw it up and got a chance for a pick, didn't come through with it, and they got a touchdown. It's a real bad play by us.
Now, back to the morning roast with Bonte and Shasky.
Boy, that was at the height of the Steve Wilks hate. Jordan Addison right before halftime, Vikings go up 16-7. They end up winning that game back on October 23rd of last season, 22-17. 22-17, Jordan Addison, 7 catches, 123 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Or excuse me, 2 touchdowns in that game against the 49ers. McCaffrey did play. He scored a touchdown. Kirk Cousins was unbelievable in that game. Kirk Cousins threw for 378 yards in that football game, 35-45. Did not get sacked. Did not get sacked once. Of course, Brock Purdy threw the 2 picks in the fourth quarter. Run game wasn't going anywhere. Brandon Ayuk had 5 targets in the first half, 57 yards. He got 1 target in the second half. That was a nightmare. That was in the midst of that 3-game losing streak last year where the Niners scored 17-17-17. And, of course, it was cover zero Blitzgate. Because everybody was ready for Steve Wilks.
Well, two things can be true.
He was basically a dead man walking from that moment on.
Two things can be true. Charvarius has got to make that play. And what are you doing?
Cover zero blitz.
I mean, just what are you doing? I honestly thought, and I know this sounds insane, it was a fireable at halftime offense.
Right. I thought Shanahan was going to fire him before the Bengals game. Because then the Bengals game happened the first half, and Joe Burrow was like 19-19 or some crazy stuff. He was like perfect.
I think Greg Williams got fired after Henry Ruggs had a walk-off touchdown on a cover of the Jets game.
Yes.
I think Greg Williams, defensive coordinator, when Adam Gase was the head coach, he got fired after that.
That was late in the season, though.
Yeah, it was.
That was in December, because that was when Baby Jazz was born.
70-yard bomb, right?
Right.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. It was the day after Zach Wilson got punked in Coastal Carolina. I'm calling Shasker for the hospital. We're both like, this guy ain't it. He ain't it.
Oh, it's so funny.
the Coastal Carolina game. Because the next day, the Raiders beat the Jets. I remember that. I had Baby Chance in my arm, and they threw 2 straight bombs. Didn't they drop one or overthrow one on the previous play?
Yeah, Derek missed, I think, Nelson Aguilar right before, and then and Ruggs just wide open.
They ran back-to-back cover zero blitzes.
Greg Williams.
When you bring up cover zero blitz, I will. It used to be Jeff Wilson Jr. against Arizona. That's what I thought
about. Texas route.
Yeah.
Cover zero blitz against the Texas route. When everybody nitpicked Jimmy Garoppolo, said, well, the ball placement really wasn't there. Remember that? Jimmy threw for over 400 that game, and people were like, even Guru tried to say, well, I got people saying, no, Guru, you're saying Jimmy Garoppolo's ball placement on a Texas route.
Could you imagine if like the catch happened today? People would be like, I mean, Joe was kind of throwing it away, right? I mean, did he have to throw it that high? Dwight, did he? Are we sure he got both feet down? Did he secure the catch before spiking it?
I'm not going to lie. I run a lot of cover zero blitzes.
I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
I run a lot of cover zero blitzes at LSU. You can get burned on those bad boys. I've had receiver screens go for 95 against me on a cover zero blitz.
Hey, video game defense is difficult.
So we all know about the cover zero blitz. It's Steve Wilks. We'll talk to Matthew Collar here at 6:50 about the Minnesota Vikings insider, or excuse me, covers the Vikings for purpleinsider.com. We'll go behind it and be lines with that one. But yeah, it was a problem. But Brock Purdy, he wasn't at his best in that game, and I know he suffered a concussion. He shouldn't have been out there. He threw the 2 picks. Look, when you're on the football field, what do coaches say? What do players say? We step between the white lines. Pardon me. There are no excuses.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to use a concussion excuse. He threw 2 picks in the fourth quarter in a very winnable football game. They didn't get after Kirk Cousins. But Brock Purdy, he played all right last week without Christian McCaffrey. Greg Cosell, who joins Willard or Dibbs every single week, Shasky, had this to say about Brock Purdy, his observation on how Purdy looked without CMC.
I mean, obviously McCaffrey's a great player, but I mean, when Purdy has to drop back and throw a ball, that's not necessarily a function of Christian McCaffrey. I thought Purdy was kind of Purdy. He was efficient. He made good throws. He's got enough movement that he can move around and make plays. The scheme and the system and Purdy's ability to execute it at a high level all go together. And, you know, there's some great examples of that. Kittle, the 26-yarder to start the second quarter field goal drive, was a beautifully designed, what we call a flood concept. It's a three-level stretch concept. Kittle ran the intermediate route. Beautiful design. I'm sure you guys remember Juszczyk's 34-yard reception, which was a Kyle Shanahan classic, because what he likes to do is put a second level defender who has both a run and a pass responsibility. He likes to put that player in conflict, and that's exactly what he did on the Juszczyk 34-yard reception. That was beautiful design. When I saw that play on the coaching tape, you know, I got excited. That's what I love about football. But, you know, Purdy just executes what he's asked to execute at a really high level. And I think people lose sight of how difficult that is to do, play after play after play, week after week after week, and they view him, well, he's just running a great system. You know, that's really hard to do, and he does it at a really high level.
That's Greg Cosell.
A, I love Greg Cosell. I'm so happy he's with the station right now.
I know. It's unbelievable.
But B, I've watched a lot of quarterbacks play live in person. And the one thing that Purdy does so well, and it's so hard to describe, you either know it when you see it or you don't. And I don't expect everyone's eye to be this keen. He, like, knows who he's going to attack when they're in zone, right? And he knows they're in zone. He knows what receiver he's going to throw to on an intermediate route, and he waits for that window to just open up. But his ability to not have his face mask staring directly at the guy he knows he wants to throw to, and then having such a great feel for when the break is going to happen, and anticipating the throw and getting himself ready to throw before that guy's out of the break, because he understands by the time he releases it and the ball gets to where it's going, that linebacker, that safety won't have enough time to be able to react into the window that he's throwing into. I don't even know if I'm describing it.
No, you're doing it. I know. Anticipation. It's anticipation.
He had to throw to Jennings.
Right.
That was so on the money, and it's down, I don't know, 15 or 20 yards down the field, and it's just bang, catchable right there. The linebacker can do nothing. He did nothing wrong. He didn't waste any movement. He didn't go left. He didn't go right. It was just a perfect break cut, and Purdy just reads it. If you run zone, he is going to slice you to death.
Well, I think the thing that you're describing here, the receiver, before he even breaks on his route, before he makes his cut, whether it's a 7-yard post route or excuse me, he's running a post or a corner, and he's before he gets his head around, the ball's already in the air. But one thing I love about Purdy, and what calms me down about the quarterback position right now with the 49ers, is it's before the throw. It's his mechanics, the footwork, resetting in a pocket. He could be scrambling. He somehow, some way resets, gets his feet in the right spot, pointing in the right direction to throw that football, and he throws it on time with anticipation. So he never gets out of whack with the fundamentals. He never looks like he's in a hurry. He's got a calmness to him in the pocket where you see quarterbacks all the time in this league where if they scramble once, like Josh Dobbs, I love Josh Dobbs to death, right? But I know when that rush comes in, his eyes leave. It doesn't, it start all of a sudden he's not looking downfield. He's looking at the rush, and then he's looking to run to make something happen with his legs. Where Brock Purdy's like, look, I'm gonna keep my eyes down the field, but I'm gonna be calm with my footwork. My fundamentals never change whatsoever. And once you get the fundamentals right and you get your footwork right, Shasky, and all of a sudden you're making throws on the point. Like, that's the beautiful thing about Brock Purdy playing quarterback. And what I love about him is that he never seems to be in a hurry, and he knows to just keep his fundamentals intact, because that's where it starts.
Yeah. Yeah, and his you're talking about his pocket presence, like his feel. Bill Walsh had a video that I love that they gave out to season ticket holders, and it was a retired Roger Craig and Joe Montana, and at the time he was still playing Jerry Rice, and they're running routes on an empty field.
I remember that.
And it was Bill Walsh explaining just fundamentals of any offense, and what he was saying was that, like, I could isolate just Joe's feet and I will know whether it's going to be a completion or not.
Yep.
He's like, I would just look at his feet, and we would break down his footwork in the pocket. And when he was trying to explain to Steve Young how to play the quarterback position, because he had to teach him. He literally had to teach him. He was like, let's just look at Joe's feet, because he was trying to explain to Steve how to play the position. And when I look at Brock Purdy and I watch how calm his feet are, they're incredible. But not only are they calm, it's the way, like your point, when he's looking here, he resets. His footwork is dynamic.
They're in the right place. They're in the right place. Pointing at the direction he's throwing. You know, you see Kurt
Warner's shoulder at the target.
When guys throw interceptions, they're like, hey, first thing you do, look at their footwork. Where's their feet pointing to? And it's all out of whack. Mm-hmm. One's pointing to the left, one's pointing to the right. You throw an interception in the middle of the field. His footwork is on point. He's up, you know, everybody says, like, you know, he's like a ballet dancer with the way he kind of glides and taps around in the pocket, and he never seems to get flustered when he does get rushed out of the pocket. He resets. He throws a very catchable football, too. Seems like the receivers love catching footballs from him. So, Brock Purdy, I'm really excited to see what he does without Christian McCaffrey, because I think he could put to bed all the doubters, all the haters. He has a great stretch here without CMC, no matter how long CMC may be out. But if he plays lights out and he plays at an MVP level, then there's any question that he's not the guy out here in San Francisco.
Don't lie to yourself. There are a few of you out there. Don't some of you want to see this?
Absolutely. Don't you kind of want to see it?
I do. A part of me does. And I'm not some Brock hater. Call in. I want to hear from you. Like, be honest with yourself. You kind of want to see it a little.
888-957-9570 is the number. Let's come up with a game brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. We'll go behind enemy lines with Matthew Collar. He covers the Vikings for PurpleInsider.com. We'll get to Minnesota and get a first look at what the Vikings are bringing to the table Sunday against the Niners at 10 a.m. out in Minnesota for their home opener. That's coming up here on the Rust.
Bonte, Shasky, Morning Roast. That was Sunday, October 25th, 1964, Kezar Stadium. The coach of the Minnesota Vikings, the former L.A. Ram quarterback, Norm Van Brocklin, against your 49ers, as Billy Kilmer gets stripped, ball goes on the ground, and Jim Marshall runs the wrong way at Kezar.
What year was that?
1964.
Was it 1964, November the 8th?
Nope, October 25th. Oh, I'm looking at it right here.
Oh, yeah, they played twice that year.
There wasn't a lot of people in the league.
Yeah.
Dave Parks caught an 80-yard bomb from John Brody, okay? And Fran Tarkenton was running around in this particular game. But Jim Marshall, when I think of Vikings Niners, in my mind, I think of my grandfather explaining to me, and then he picked up the ball, and he started running the other way, and the entire crowd's like, what's he doing?
We
couldn't believe it. And then he got to the end zone, and he just dropped the ball.
Dude, it was one of the most iconic plays growing up, watching that, whether it's Vikings. Now, when I think Vikings Niners, unfortunately, I think about that divisional round game.
Okay.
87. Minnesota upsetting the 49ers 36-24, where the Vikings are running off the field saying, Steve Young's the future. Joe Montana's done. Anthony Carter killed him. Killed him. And then, of course, the Niners have been able to handle the Vikings in the playoffs since then. But there's a lot of memories between Brett Favre, Greg Lewis. How about that one?
I mean, the Jim Marshall play, though, Bonte, I don't know. Do the young people know that play?
They know about that play.
Do you guys know about that was like the Jose Canseco-like play where Canseco had the ball bounce off his head. Like, Jim Marshall going the wrong way is like, what are you doing?
And then you have some of the Niners kind of chasing him like, let's just make sure he gets into that end zone.
One of the Niner guys could give him like a pat on the back at the end of it. It's like, thanks,
and then
dude.
Jim Marshall kind of looks around like, oh, geez.
Iconic moment.
Oh, no. Well, let's go behind enemy lines. We're going to go to Matthew Collar, who covers the Vikings for PurpleInsider.com, as we go behind enemy lines here for week number two as the Niners take on the Minnesota Vikings this Sunday at 10 a.m.
When you need to learn about your opponent,
you have to go behind enemy lines, learning what we need to know about the 49ers' next opponent.
A wrestler's going to come out to a bunch of pyrotechnics.
Matthew, good morning to you, brother. Matthew Collar joins us here on the
Stone
River Islands. Matthew Collar joins us on the River Islands guest line. All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands, and Lathrop? Matthew, how you doing, man? Good morning.
I'm doing well, you know. Actually kind of pretty jacked up for this game after the Vikings blew out the Giants. You know, San Francisco gets a blowout, so let's see how good everybody really is, right?
Absolutely. Do they talk about the Jim Marshall play in Minnesota from way back in 1964? Do you know about that play?
Oh, yeah. You could not live in Minnesota and not be aware of the Jim Marshall play. I actually think it might be one of the reasons that he's not in the Hall of Fame, which I personally think is kind of a travesty that he's not. I mean, he was a captain for the Vikings for 14 straight years and Bud Grant's favorite player of all time. And I think that being his main highlight that everyone thinks of, plus playing on the same line as Alan Page and Carl Eller, probably gets overlooked. And people go back to those Pro Bowls, which is really unfair, because all the other, you know, Vikings defensive linemen were getting those Pro Bowls. I mean, all-time great NFL player, but certainly a quintessential NFL blunder as well.
Wow, that's some good knowledge right there. Wow, not even in the Hall of Fame. Jim Marshall was unbelievable. The Purple People Eaters, of course, back in the day in the 60s and 70s, of course, the Vikings had a powerhouse out there going to 4 Super Bowls. Unfortunately, didn't win one. But Niners and Vikings got a nice little history. I just brought up the 87 game, divisional round, upset the apple cart. Bill Walsh almost got fired from that game. When we say Niners and Vikings, because we are jacked up about it, and we understand that I'm in the belief that this could be a close game. It's tough playing in that dome. They got the horn going on. But when I say Niners and Vikings, what do you think of here, Matthew?
Yeah, well, the first thing I think of is just how the Kirk Cousins era Vikings always struggled so much. But now, you know, now it's kind of a new opportunity to play better against this team, because it felt like every time Kirk Cousins would play the San Francisco defense, they were able to shut down the run, and then they would force Cousins to be a drop-back quarterback, and that wasn't very good for him. That wasn't ideal. I mean, if you talk about back in the day, of course, 87 comes up, but I think of all the talent that these two teams have run out there. I mean, especially wide receiver. This is the Randy Moss team, the Jerry Rice team. How about John Randall going at it with Steve Young throughout the years? I mean, the histories of these teams, I mean, are incredible. And when you look at really there's a great stat that all Minnesota fans know, which is that the Vikings have the highest regular season win percentage of any team without a Super Bowl. So when you look at those teams that have won a lot of games in the regular season, of course, San Francisco is up there on that list as well. So all the great players throughout, you know, the seasons. And then you look at this game that's coming up here. You've got your Justin Jefferson, your Nick Bosa, your two highest paid players in the NFL at their position. So I think almost every time they play, it's just superstar talent all over the field.
Yeah, and you referenced Justin Jefferson. We watched him in the receiver doc, and you know, everybody plays fantasy football now. That's kind of how the prism of knowing every team is. And everyone knows he's a stud. Sam Darnold, however, at quarterback, we have a little bit of familiarity because he was here backing up Brock Purdy, played in week 18, and you know, you ask 10 people about Sam Darnold, you get 10 different answers. So what's the feel on Sam Darnold? It looked like he had a great week last week.
Yeah, he had a phenomenal week. I don't think anybody would have guessed that he would have had that high of a completion percentage for a guy that's rarely been over 70% in games in his career. I think I looked this up, that he had only had 5 games where he had completed 70% of his passes or more. Wasn't that like Steve Young in 1994 was completing 70% of his passes?
Mm-hmm. So Look at you, Matthew.
That's not exactly that hard to do these days, and Darnold has rarely done it. But, you know, what we saw from him during training camp was Kevin O'Connell working so closely with him about rhythm and timing of an offense. And I think that in his past, when you go back and look at the receivers that he played with and the offensive lines that he played with in the past with the Jets and with the Carolina Panthers, there was very few opportunities to play with rhythm and timing. And you saw 3-step drop, hitch, throw the ball, 5-step drop, hitch, throw the ball. and receivers are there and they're open. And I think they have a very good offensive mind in Kevin O'Connell, who took some pages out of Kyle Shanahan's book with some really interesting motion. There was a 22-yard pass that Darnold had where they put the fullback in motion. And, you know, Kyle Juszczyk would be pretty proud to see that. And, you know, it kind of took a defender out of the play. The tight end ends up wide open. Stuff like that. When I would watch Sam Darnold back after the Vikings signed him with some of his previous places, you just didn't see a lot of open receivers. You saw a lot of instant losses on the offensive line. And this is a team that has two of the best offensive tackles in the NFL in Christian Darrisaw and Brian O'Neill. And that just helps a lot. I mean, yeah. I don't have to tell you guys how good a left tackle can do for your offense. And the fact also, I thought the real key was Aaron Jones running for 94 yards at almost 7 yards a carry. He was so dynamic in this game, and it allowed Sam Darnold to play from ahead, play comfortably, and if things weren't there, he completed 12 of 13 to tight ends or running backs. If it's not there, check it down to Aaron Jones. He'll make something happen. Throw underneath, and I think for at least 1 week, he adopted that mentality. Now, if he goes back to it's a tight game or they're losing, and now all of a sudden he feels like he's got to do everything with the arm, that's where you're going to get those interceptions and sacks and mistakes from him.
Matthew Collar breaking down the Minnesota Vikings here on the River Islands Guest Line. Matthew covers the Vikings for PurpleInsider.com, a wealth of knowledge when it comes to all things Minnesota. It sounds like he knows his football very, very well. All right, Vikings move on from Kirk Cousins. I want to know the reaction to that. How did Vikings fans feel about Kirk Cousins moving on to Atlanta? Were Viking fans basically done with Kirk Cousins? Was basically, it was like, hey, you know what? Let bygones be bygones. We get it. Or was there some vitriol about Kirk Cousins moving on from Minnesota?
No, I think that everybody understood that it was just time. I mean, he had been here for 6 years, and they had won nothing. And their best season was a fluky 13-win year where they won, well, I think, more one-score games than anybody in history or something like that, where they ended the season with a negative point differential, even though they won 13 games. And then they were eliminated by Daniel Jones in the playoffs, which really showed the actual strength of that team. And that was the best year other than 2019, where they won a playoff game. And as you guys well know, then they got whooped in the playoffs, and that was it. I mean, one playoff win in 6 years for one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL every year of his tenure here. I think that we had really fallen into this purgatory type of feel of like, you can't really win with him, but you're never going to be terrible with him. So now what does everybody do? And I think what Placido Flamenco used to work out there in San Francisco, I think his mentality from being there is you gotta take a swing. I mean, you're not going to chase a championship with a quarterback in his mid-30s coming off an Achilles injury. And the way I've compared it just for Vikings fans and my feeling is that it's sort of like the first day of spring and you open up the windows to get all that fresh air that comes in. That's what it felt like to draft J.J. McCarthy, and that's even what it felt like to beat the New York Giants. Like, this is new. This is different. They added so much talent on the defensive side that I thought didn't get talked about maybe enough because everyone was focusing so much on the quarterback situation. I don't think this team is suddenly, well, you get rid of Kirk Cousins and now you compete for a championship. I don't think that, but you could see down the road of being able to add talent with the cap space that that he you know, allowed them to have now in the future. I mean, you look at what Dak Prescott made. Think about this. J.J. McCarthy's salary next year is going to be like $50 million less than, you know, top starting quarterbacks. Everybody knows what you can do with that cap space. San Francisco's doing it right now around Brock Purdy. That's the model they're trying to chase. So I think everybody in the fan base understood that, and I think you're actually going to get a new energy from the fans in U.S. Bank Stadium, where I thought it's an incredible atmosphere, but I thought there was some lethargy there. I thought that they just had not had the same energy for that team that I think will be restored a little.